You are listening to Living for the Cinema with Jeff Gershon. I am a cinema enthusiast of all genres, here to discuss with you one film every episode. The good, the bad, and the ugly of what makes each film unique. Spoiler alert. No matter when this film was released, there's a good possibility I will be revealing spoilers about the plot or even possibly the ending, so just be warned. Civil War, which came out in 2024 and was directed by Alex Garland. It stars Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Kaylee Spaney, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Nick Offerman, Jefferson White, Nelson Lee, Evan Lai, Edmund Donovan, Sonoya Mizuno, and Jesse Plemons. The genre would be dystopian war epic.
All across America, critics are raving about the movie event of the year.
It is American, 100%. That's what I'm talking about.
Cool.
Going to D.C.
Are you serious? The interstates are vaporized. They shoot us on sight in the Capitol.
I've never been scared like that before. And I've never felt more alive.
Holy fucking shit!
You watch. Soon as D.C. falls, they'll turn on each other.
Whatever happens, we don't quit.
Oh my God.
You don't want to miss this.
God bless America.
Civil War, rated R. Get tickets now.
With Civil War, Alex Garland has delivered a balls-out statement against modern tribalism, which is so nakedly apolitical on the surface that it ends up being even more political as a result. It's a film with a few pretty potent messages at its core, including one that does not really completely come into focus until the actual closing credits. I'm somewhat at a loss as to why A24, the studio releasing it, has marketed this so aggressively based on the sheer spectacle of it, because this is defiantly not anything resembling a large-scale Roland Emmerich disaster movie. So I'm fairly confident that the majority of mass audiences expecting that will likely just leave the theater pissed off by it.
Help you folks? Just looking for gas.
Yeah, look, the fuel permit.
No, we're actually just passing through.
Can't help, sir.
Sir, if we pay.
I was never going to give it free.
Over the odds.
What's over the odds?
300. For half a tank and two cans.
300 buys you a sandwich. We got ham. Or cheese?
300 Canadian.
Okay.
It's not a, quote, fun watch by any stretch, but it's extremely engrossing. It's hard to categorize within any particular genre. Probably technically a war movie, but more along the lines of Apocalypse Now meets Children of Men meets previous episode City of God. Leaving this movie, I actually kept thinking about City of God and the unsettling note which that modern classic ended on regarding the main protagonist of Rocket. We cheer his individual accomplishment of working his way out of a very dicey, violent, dangerous situation, not only alive, but potentially thriving. Yet we are also reminded with the closing images of that movie that the cycle of violence is not only going to continue in this particular part of Rio de Janeiro, but that it might escalate into something even more vicious, and that his efforts as a photojournalist might have aided in this.
Aí, esqueci de dizer. Ninguém mais me chama de Buscapé. Agora eu sou Wilson Rodrigues, fotógrafo.
Now bear in mind, there is no direct comparison between Rocket's story and City of God and any particular character here. These are also very different movies, which just kind of elicited some similar feelings for me at points. And whereas City of God was attempting to dramatize true past tense events portraying the breakdown of a society, This movie is merely speculating on a possible future. This story, which is told almost entirely from the point of view of a small group of photojournalists as they traverse through about 700 miles of the American Northeast, mostly Pennsylvania, I think, to get to Washington, D.C., where they have been led to believe that a fascist third-term president, played by Nick Offerman, and his cabal now leading a fractured U.S. government, that they're about to be overtaken by a Western alliance of seceded states, including California and Texas. This is wild stuff. This band of journalists wants to get to D.C. before this planned siege so that one of them, a print journalist excellently played by Wagner Moura, can conduct one final interview with the president before he likely disappears. Or is made to disappear. Now, the cast is led by Kirsten Dunst, playing a somewhat shell-shocked veteran war photographer in a sneakily strong performance, which somewhat anchors the movie overall. She's fantastic.
I didn't take a single photo. I didn't even remember I had cameras on me. Like, oh my God. Like, why didn't I just tell him not to shoot them?
They're probably going to kill them anyway.
How do you know?
He doesn't know, but that's besides the point. Once you start asking yourself those questions, you can't stop. So we don't ask. We record so other people ask. Want to be a journalist? That's the job.
Hey, Lee.
What?
Back off.
What am I saying that's wrong?
I'm not saying it's wrong. She's just shook up.
Lee doesn't understand shook up.
Whoa. I'm not being protective of her? You're the idiot who let her in this car.
Now, granted, many of the character beats between her character and a young, super enthusiastic wannabe photog, also well played by Kaylee Spaney, who hitches herself to their group, you know, kind of follows along with them. A lot of these character beats have been seen in dozens of other stories like this before. You know, the grizzled veteran who's seen it all, and of course, the hyper enthusiastic new upstart.
Lee, I'm sorry for jamming my way into your ride, okay? I know you're really angry about it, and I know you think I don't know shit, but...
I'm not angry about that, Jesse. I don't care what you do or don't know.
Okay, but you are angry with me.
There is no version of this that isn't a mistake. I know, because I'm it. Joe and Sammy are it.
It's my choice.
Right. And I'll remember that when you lose your shit or you get blown up. Or shot.
But thanks to cannily spare writing from Garland, who also did the screenplay, with truly minimal exposition provided in his script, to pitch-perfect subtle performances, and literally everything surrounding these characters, we are still along for one hell of an emotionally draining ride. That is certainly the case here as the audience, through these four travelers, which also include the excellent Stephen McKinley Henderson, playing the oldest reporter in this crew, also probably the least mobile, we as an audience tag along as they embark on a briskly paced journey comprised of a series of very tense exchanges, some brief moments of relief, interaction, and some brutally efficient demonstrations of violence.
What's going on?
Someone in that house. They're stuck. We're stuck.
Who do you think they are?
No idea.
We're press.
Cool. Now I understand why it's written on the side of your vehicle.
Are you WF? Who's giving you orders?
No one's giving us orders, man. Someone's trying to kill us. We are trying to kill them.
Now, the urban warfare stuff bookending this movie can be quite harrowing. But even more so? Well, let me point you to one particular sequence, a more subtle one, which has already been heavily emphasized within the trailers for this movie. And I believe mistakenly, but that's more the fault of A24's marketing department. Our crew visits a seemingly civilized, boutique-y suburban downtown. They visit a clothing store and are surprised by what the girl at the counter is telling them. It's among just a few well-earned comical moments within this film.
Out of interest, but... are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
Oh, sure. But we just try to stay out.
Stay out?
With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
Yeah.
Well, let me know if you want to try anything on.
Thanks.
But the payoff as to why things just seem so quaint and quiet comes just a few minutes later with one simple, entirely visual reveal. Which is not to say that major cities are faring any better, as we witness during this film's brilliantly filmed extended climax in Washington, D.C. And again, the marketing department probably spoiled too much of this. It's by this point in the movie where Garland and crew, including DP Rob Hardy, hot off of the exemplary work that he did last year from Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, it feels as if these guys took a glance at the excellent climaxes of Zero Dark Thirty and Children of Men and set upon themselves to raise the bar even further. This is masterful filmmaking. The spectacle is there for sure, but it's still entirely at the service of an uncompromising story with something profound to say. And no, it's not the first film to say this, of course. Far from it. But it says it very well. And now the categories. The first category would be the best needle drop. This is the best song cue or piece of score used throughout the runtime of the film, because music is essential to film. What truly stands out among the soundscape for this movie are some seemingly ironic needle drops playing over sequences when you might least expect them. Keep the drink burning forever. One such standout comes about two-thirds of the way through the movie over stark imagery of a forest being burned, which our heroes are now driving through. It comes from Jackson, Kentucky's own alt-country singer-songwriter Sturgill Simpson from his 2016 Grammy Award-winning album A Sailor's Guide to Earth. This dreamy country ditty is titled Breaker's Roar.
Oh, how the breakers roar, keep pulling me farther from shore. Thoughts turn to a love so kind, just keep me losing my mind. So enticing, deep dark sea, it's so easy.
One other musical choice, which I know has raised quite a few eyebrows, occurs earlier in the film, playing over truly disturbing post-conflict imagery of one particular armed faction at a business park, rounding up some of the remaining survivors from opposing forces, which they just bested in a firefight, and then executing them one by one. The music plays over this. Yeah, not pleasant by any stretch. But the song itself is a very catchy hip-hop single from one of the early pioneers of American hip-hop, Long Island's own De La Soul, from their seminal 1989 album, which is called 3 Feet and Rising. Now, this particular selection might not work for everyone, but for me it just does. And I love the sampling of Hall & Oates, too. The track is one of their hit singles titled Say No Go.
Now let's get right on down to the skit. A baby is brought into a world of pits. And if we could have talked that soon in a delivery room, they would have asked the nurse for a hit. The reason for this? The mother is a jerk. Excuse me, junkie was brought the work of the old into a new life. What a way. But this what a way has been a way of today. Anyway, push couldn't shove me to understand a path to a base set. Cause Schumann should have raced it in a first wave. Cause second wave from believers and believers will walk to it then even talk to it and say. None of that. Tell them what to say, Mace.
The next category would be wasted talent. This is the most underutilized talent involved with the film. Okay, I'm going to get somewhat political here, but even more so, just going to talk about the discourse to this film. Now, I made the mistake of listening to and reading several contrarian reviews before recording this one. And I'll say this. The overall discourse against this movie might be the most misguided that I've witnessed since Joker came out 5 years ago. Not only does it feel as if folks are missing the point of what Garland was trying to say, but many seem unwilling or unable to even acknowledge that the movie has a point of view. which is just crazy. Now, I put a good amount of the blame for that on the marketing department at A24, because as I said previously, they marketed this aggressively as a different type of dystopian action disaster movie, and I'm fairly confident that they kept putting out the whole, quote, Western Alliance imagery comprising California and Texas, which, yes, are two somewhat diametrically opposed states from an ideological standpoint. They did this as an effective attention-grabbing effort to troll audiences and gain more attention for the movie in advance.
Citizens of America,
the so-called Western forces of Texas and California
have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
And hey, bravo! Because American audiences getting so hung up on the inaccuracy of this particular pairing has dominated so much of the conversation in the lead up to this film's release. And now the movie's out and it's making bank, so mission accomplished. Therefore, I am fairly confident that a lot of folks, critics, pundits, online influencers, they came into this movie ready and eager to be pissed off. Which I get. The movie by design is frequently unpleasant, disturbing, and it holds up an ugly mirror to our society.
We need to go down there.
They shoot journalists on sight in the Capitol.
If I'm being honest, I left the theater in not the best mood. But I have 2 points to make to those who are sharply criticizing this film for what I believe are misguided reasons. One, despite what Alex Garland and the cast promoting this movie have said in many an interview, this film is not, quote, apolitical. Now, I'll get into one soon, but there are many themes to this story. And more often than not, they are expressed purely visually. No, they're not spelled out in the context of today's hyperpartisan discourse. There are no characters wearing MAGA hats, nor Confederate flags being flown about, nor discussions of abortion. But make no mistake, they are there. The messages are there. And number two, oy vey. The whole discussion about California, Texas, Florida, whatever, it's just random world building done mostly through the marketing of the movie. That's it. This has been presented to us as one possible near future scenario for the United States. I mean, look, as a politically literate American adult myself, do I foresee it as a strong possibility that in some not too distant future that we could have civil war breaking out among factions comprising both blue and red states, including California and Texas? Well, no. But it's not so absurd of a notion to distract me from what this movie is saying. And apparently over the past several years, there has been a massive migration of folks from California to Texas. So who knows how that would affect things within a couple of decades. But the point is that this whole state thing has little bearing on the plot of the movie. Bottom line, as I've stated in previous reviews, cinema is first and foremost a visual medium. I would advise anyone watching this film to simply observe how the characters on screen treat each other and how they interact. This film is saying a lot just through that. The next category would be the trailer moment. This is the scene or moment that best describes this movie. Now, along those lines, anyone who watches this intently and is still insistent that it's truly apolitical is just not paying attention. Sorry. Because every point made is clearly on display. Oh, it's there. It's not pretty, and it's not overblown for dramatic effect either. Just as an example, just look at how small towns and rural pockets of America are portrayed within this saga. It's as if you followed the lyrics of Jason Aldean's controversial country hit single, Try That in a Small Town, through the looking glass to their logical conclusion.
See how far you make it down the road. Around here we take care of our own. You cross that line, it won't take long for you to find out. I recommend you don't try that in a small town.
The absence of a centralized government or just urban visitors has not brought about any boundless sense of unfettered freedom to these places. No, it's quite the opposite, actually, as many of the more remote areas traversed by our protagonists feel more like weekend warrior free-for-alls with no fences or no gates to separate them. And this is never more prevalent than a truly harrowing sequence occurring around the 70-minute mark at an abandoned lot off of a country road where our four main protagonists encounter a disturbingly calm yet menacing Jesse Plemons. And man, does he excel at playing folks like this really well. He does a great job.
There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you?
Clad in clearly not officially sanctioned camouflage, carrying a machine gun, and sporting bright red glasses.
You don't know?
Who is threatening them, questioning them, and standing confidently with a horrific display of his handiwork right beside them. Now, I'm not going to go into the sequence any further than that, but let's just say that it provides a stark reminder that in this post-Civil War environment, much of this nation's, quote, heartland is very likely to be dominated by the brashest with the biggest guns. As written, filmed, and performed, this sequence is a masterclass of tension. The final category would be the MVP. This is the person or people who are most responsible for the success of this film. In case it was not already obvious, the tone of this movie is grim when it's not agonizingly tense. And this has been Alex Garland's forte from the get-go. With this, previous episode Dread, the admittedly superior Ex Machina, Men to a lesser extent, and his top masterpiece, in my opinion, previous episode Annihilation.
When I look at my hands and my fingerprints, I can see them moving. If I let you go and you tied me to a chair and cut me open,
are my insides gonna move like my fingerprint?
Garland has excelled at putting his main protagonists through the proverbial ringer, but with zero emotional payoff. We are rarely, if ever, quote, growing with these characters, and their journeys are almost told entirely visually, all around them and on the surface. Any true lessons learned or fallout comes after the credits start to roll, just as Domhnall Gleeson's Caleb at the end of Ex Machina. And for me personally, even as I might have had some doubts along the way as to how effectively Garland was accomplishing what he set out to do here, those doubts were completely laid to rest with one utterly chilling line delivery, the last line to be uttered in the movie, no less. Civil War at its core is a cautionary tale of a society collapsing onto itself, where no one is immune from losing their humanity, even those who are just trying to objectively inform the rest of us. I applaud Alex Garland for writing and directing this particular tale in the manner that only he could. And for that reason, he is the MVP.
But we certainly attempted to make an anti-war movie. It's a lot of stuff. It's how music is used, how something is framed, actually how it's cut is a huge, huge part of that. But it's also in the presentation and the choreography of the action itself. And so it depends where you're drawing your grammar from. So film has a grammar of combat that it's developed in complicated ways over the years. And what we did was our grammar was largely taken from things like news footage or documentaries or lived experience.
My rating for Civil War would be 4.75 stars out of 5. Wow, I already had Garland among my favorites, but now he's joined the ranks of some of my other favorite filmmakers who have excelled at putting out real, true lightning rod films, along the lines of Oliver Stone or Spike Lee. Good company. Regardless, this was truly a fantastic movie, which I intend on revisiting soon. But if I'm being honest, I could wait a while before actually discussing it again with anyone else. It's just that kind of movie. And if you're looking to watch Civil War, it is now playing in theaters. See it with the biggest screen and the best sound possible. And that ends another incendiary review. Please like, subscribe, and share the Living for the Cinema podcast, and follow and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Letterboxd. And join us next time for another review from Living for the Cinema.